you have a lot of memories from Thailand then.
Yeah.
Do you like it, good or bad, or not so fond of Thailand?
What, Thailand?
Yeah.
What, do I like the homes there?
Not the homes, but did you like the country?
Oh, yeah. Well, we didn't see much of it, did we?
No, we didn't. We didn't.
About 4 years ago, I had the chance to go back with a couple of my brothers, because I had a younger brother that passed away, and he lived his whole life in Thailand pretty much. So we scattered his ashes in the ocean there. It was a wild experience going back to that country that I knew it and I loved it, but didn't know anything. And we went as a tourist and did like touristy things, and it was amazing. It was really a good trip.
That's awesome.
I want to go back there for sure.
Yeah. I need to do that too. It's almost like reconciling with the country or something like that.
It really was. I was like, I'm going to put my feet down on this ground and tell them that they didn't break me.
That's awesome.
Not win.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Welcome everyone to Butterflies and Bravery.
Yeah.
We have a very exciting episode today, because it's not just Whisper and I with a guest, it is Whisper and I with two guests, and they are part of the, is it called COG TFI Survivor?
Yes.
Is that the right? Yes.
Yes.
And do you want to explain basically what that is and maybe how it came about?
We started in February around David Burrow's birthday, because we know that was always like a celebration in the cult. So we wanted to do something that was like exposing in an opposite way instead of celebrating the cult. Also at the time, the Ghislaine Maxwell scandal was like going viral on media. We saw some parallels between some of her crimes, and then she was being punished for her crimes and like held accountable, but some of her crimes, which were very similar to what Karen Zerbe has done, but Karen Zerbe has never been held accountable for what she's done. Yeah, that's why we started with making an infographic with comparing Ghislaine Maxwell and Karen Zerbe, and that's how it started into a bigger social media campaign.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Awesome. And what's your guys' focus right now? Do you have a particular project or a particular goal that you're working towards right now? Or is it more like just laying foundation, getting a following, that type of thing?
We have different social media themes we focus on every month. But our ultimate goal, we have two things. One thing for people to do is they can sign the petition to bring Karen Zerbe and TFI to justice. And our second goal, of course, ultimately is to have the relevant authorities take legal action against Karen Zerbe and TFI. That'd be more of a long-term goal.
Okay, yeah, for sure. I've been curious to ask you guys a few questions, but one of them is, one of the problems that we've always run into with trying to get justice is so much of the stuff that happened was like overseas or people crossing borders all over the place. The likelihood that Karen Zerbe's not even in the U.S., we'd have to get her extradited to have her in court, basically. Have you guys like talked to some lawyers and what that would look like? I'm just curious about it, because that's always been like the ceiling that we've hit before when we tried to go about getting some justice.
Yeah, that is one of the main challenges that survivors face. We haven't been able to establish those legal details yet, but yeah, we've been talking to and consulting with lawyers. Although one thing is that besides the fact Karen Zerbe is American, a lot of the main leadership and some of the most atrocious abusers, they are American, and so that might be in our favor.
If we can't get Zerbe into the States, we could go after and try to bring some of the other bigger leaders.
Yeah, like Sarah Kelly. Picture.
Yeah. It must feel a little bit big to you guys sometimes, because there's so many missing parts and so many moving parts. And with us, an ex-member community that we have, our second generation community, everyone's so different and has so many different opinions about this and that and how to go about it. That's probably got to be a pretty overwhelming experience trying to bring all of that together from people, right? Woo.
Yeah, I also found that very challenging because my experience in TFI was I lived in a single TFI home, and then I lived in that home without any interaction with other TFI people, even when I was still in TFI. Oh, so like being part of this group was like the first time I had interaction with other survivors. So it was all very new for me.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy.
You pretty much grew up in the same, not only the same country and city, but the same house even, which that's so unusual. And then Natasha, you had the opposite experience, right?
Yes.
Cities and
I think I counted once, and we must have lived in 35 different houses.
Wow.
A lot of moving around, for sure.
Yeah, it's a wild experience to have that happen.
Yeah, definitely. It's nowhere called home, I think. Even now, I think I struggle a bit to identify as a person from any country, even though I'm French. Both my parents are French. I never feel French. Truly, nor do I feel Thai, even though I was born there and spent most of my childhood there. So, it's special, isn't it?
Yes. There's this, they call them TICs, which is third culture kids. And that's the closest thing that I, when I read about that, like when I read stuff that they write, I was like, that's about the closest it feels like. It does make sense. And it's interesting that some of the things that the psychiatrists and psychologists have seen are similar stuff that, like, I think a lot of us struggle with keeping relationships. They put one foot in, not two, because at any moment you're going to be somewhere else. And that's really interesting because that's very similar to a lot of us, our experiences too. It's just like, there's that hesitation to embrace, I guess, anything really.
Never let your roots grow too strong.
Yeah, I love that song. I got no roots.
I know. That's one of my favorite songs too.
Yeah. It's kind of like, well, if y'all are going to be proud of your heritage, then we'll be proud of our not heritage.
One of the ways that I feel the most unusual sometimes still that I have not settled into is things like holidays, both in the country that I'm in, which currently is the United States, but or any other holiday, like there's just no connection to any of it. And Christmas was pretty much the only like other outside world holiday that we ever, and I wouldn't even call it celebrated. We
observed it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wouldn't say we celebrated it. I think for us, and certainly in Thailand, it was more like the hardest labor period of the year because
we had to practice
constantly and go out and do Christmas shows and things like that. So it was a very stressful time.
Yeah.
Just awful.
Oof. Oh, I was in the sink room with the kids that had whooping cough at Christmas time, and one of them puked in my dinner.
Oh no.
You remember that one when we got a catered meal at the TC that Christmas when everybody had whooping cough? And that never ever happened. So it was really special. I got one plate, a kid puked in it. I'm like, a kid puked in my plate. Can I have something else? And they're like, sorry, it's all gone. So I literally had nothing.
Sucked. I know.
Did we already answer the question about what the survivor groups about and all that?
Ella was filling us in a little bit. What I understand is like you guys have a long-term goal and then a current goal, which is so there's like awareness.
I think it's our main goals at the moment are to raise awareness of not only the past crimes that the cult committed, but the fact that current leader Karen Zerbe is still out there and has never been even investigated, let alone faced any charges. And to us, it's pretty incredulous. The main excuses we've been given by authorities and justice bodies worldwide, really every time we look into it, is we have two issues. We've got the problem with the locations in which it happens. So if you take my example, I was sexually abused at age 4 by a Filipino national whilst living in Thailand, and I'm a French national now living in France. So you can see from a justice point of view, where do you even start? Yeah. Let alone, you'd have to prove the guy was even there. You'd have to prove it was even him because he was using a fake name, as most members in the cult did. So we've got that issue, and then we've got the time that has passed as well. And that's two challenges we face, or we thought we faced, because when we look then at situations like Ghislaine Maxwell, who's just been convicted, it seems when the media gets really interested in something and there's a big social media storm about it, suddenly these problems that we think we're facing seem not to be an issue anymore. And we've seen that time and time again with Epstein, with other abusers, where locations and time doesn't seem to be an issue as long as the media is really interested in it. So based on that, we thought, what can we do? Let's try and get some more attention online. Let's do a campaign. Let's try and get as many followers as possible. Let's try and get as many people to sign our petition on change.org as possible. Let's see if we can't get people interested enough so that authorities in the US, most likely it's going to have to start there, or elsewhere where the cult was very active, that they actually start doing something and at least open an investigation at the very least. So that was our beginning ideas. And we've been running campaigns since then on social media.
Yeah.
And there are people who would say, oh, you're just banging on about the past, the cult has changed. And firstly, that's not true. They haven't changed that much. Yes, they're not doing the same level of crimes as they were in the past, but just because, let's just pretend like they have changed. Let's go with that theory. What is that relevant to what we're trying to do here? Just because someone's changed their outside image and said, oh, we promise we're not doing these same things before, you have a totally different way of working. It doesn't matter. You still did those things in the past. There were still tens of thousands of children affected by it who are still affected by it now in their adult years. So I'm sorry. That's not relevant.
Can you imagine if you brought it down to a day-to-day regular situation? Some guy rapes a woman 10 years later. He's, I've changed. And they're like, oh, that's okay then. That's fine. Since you changed.
Exactly. But that's very much be what Steve Kelly and Karen Zerbe have been trying to push on the world. Zalberg, this wasn't us. We're totally different. Look at how we've changed things since we've been in charge. And they forget the fact that they were actually David Berg's right-hand man and woman for all the years all the worst abuse was taking place. And you're talking about a guy who was a completely useless alcoholic for many years as well. The person who really ran the show for many years before his death was Karen Zerbe, certainly. She approved everything that came out, including the story of Dalma Dito book and every other publication that led to widespread sexual abuse on children. So it's very cute for her to try and sell her story now that she had nothing to do with any of it. Better, I think.
Yes. I'm curious also about, do you guys have any plans to prosecute, take some of this to civil court?
It'd be very difficult for me. I'll let Ella answer after. It'd be very difficult for me to do anything from France, that's for sure. I think if anything would be possible on a jurisdictional level, it would probably need to originate in the U.S. just based on the fact that Karen Zerbe is a U.S. citizen, the cult was founded in the U.S., etc.
Yeah.
I mean, I have looked into options on international justice bodies, but I've just hit a wall. But again, we keep hitting these walls, but if we manage to get enough attention online and social media and things like that, you'll find that these walls suddenly crumble. So that's the way we're going now because we've hit so many walls on actually taking legal action.
Yeah, very true.
Ella, you had the same experience?
Yeah, especially in many countries in Asia, a TFI didn't even register as an organization. So the government didn't even know of their existence in a lot of situations. And they would just operate through like third party charities or humanitarian organizations. So it's very difficult to take action against TFR as an organization because the government would just say it didn't actually exist. Because I've been looking into some of these options over the last few years. Like the only hope for justice is to sue individuals for their individual crimes. But it's quite difficult to take action against the organization as a whole.
Okay, yeah. I mean, because I've even wondered, what do they call it? Do they call it a RICO? Like, thinking about just the amount of money that was exchanged in hands and crossing borders. And you're talking about millions and millions of dollars that have never been taxed by any government. I would think that somebody might be curious about that, or not curious, but there's an investment, there's an interest, you know, monetarily. But if what you're saying you've come up against, that that's not even close to being possible, there's not point in chasing that rabbit.
Yeah, the issue is they've always been very smart, the TFI leadership. Ella said they never, or almost never, actually registered themselves as the Family International or Children of God anywhere. They were always fake or NGO organization names all over the world. So to prove that they were even active and existent in a country is almost impossible. So how do you go after an organization that keeps telling people they don't exist these days, even though they're still turning over about a million a year? Apparently they don't exist. Where do you even start with tracing those funds? They were always so secretive, and
yeah,
in the way they did things, it's so difficult to get any solid evidence.
Yeah. And they also, like, specifically Karen Zerbe and Kelly, they changed their names, like legally changed their names a few different times.
Yeah.
So there's that you're up against. And what you were saying about being in the country, like how many people did you know that were in a country, like overstaying their visa, not even getting a visa to be in the country?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's very sinister in that sort of like really like low, dirty, gross kind of way.
Yeah. And I think the reason they pushed people very early on in the cult to move out to these third world countries was precisely for that reason. They knew that they couldn't get away with that in Western countries or the US. So they moved everyone out to these countries where you could give people backhand wads of cash to get away with things. You could get away with almost anything back in those days in Asia and Africa and places like that.
Yes, true. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I was aware of a practice in TFI in Taiwan when I was very young. For us, basically all the adults, it was called getting a visa sponsor, in which a company agreed to have you as their employee on paper, but you actually did no work for them. And that was a way to stay legally in the country. So that's how many TFI people stayed in countries like Taiwan.
Proper visa fraud.
I definitely admire what you guys are doing for even like knowing all the walls that are being hit and probably still gonna be hit, and just to keep trying to move forward with what we can, because we sat in our podcast with Dr. Yanya Lalich, and she straight out said that like the worst thing of the worst stuff that's ever happened in cults to kids is to the Children of God kids. And she's been studying cults for 30 years. That's a pretty bold statement, or in as far as it was, I think it's validating in a lot of ways that at least mm-hmm. there's some people out there that believe what happened and believe that it was horribly wrong.
Yeah, I think one thing that's been encouraging for me is that from the comments and interaction on our Facebook and Instagram, we not only reach our fellow TFI survivors, but also maybe people who are like ex-fundamentalist Christian or in like oppressive mm-hmm. religious institutions. Like they've also like felt spoken for, or felt like someone was speaking up for their experiences, because a lot of TFI types of child abuse were also like quite typical in fundamentalist churches.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. The religious aspect of it. I work part-time with a nonprofit organization that's anti-human trafficking. And the more I learn about it, the more I realize how similar some of the experiences that they've gone through too. It is, because so many of them have been kept basically just controlled and kept and separated. And when they finally get away, it's like being born into a new world, which is all of our experiences. So yeah, it is interesting the different ways you can connect to people with such varying backgrounds. And you're absolutely right. It is very encouraging to get that sort of feedback. Just to hear, hey, you made a difference. You made a difference to me today. It's huge.
I think what's really important as well is to consider, even though much of these crimes happened 20, 30 years ago, what's very important to me is definitely the ongoing impact. There are people out there who would say, leave the past in the past. There's nothing you can do. You've tried. At some point, you've got to move on with your life. Do I really? Because there are still people nowadays who are committing suicide because of this cold.
Yeah.
We've had two losses very recently. Were direct suicide that were directly related to the trauma of the cult upbringing.
Yeah.
And those who haven't killed themselves, certainly so many people that I speak to from the cult suffer with some form of PTSD or severe anxiety, depression, things like that, or on medication. Yeah. So this is not something that just happened in the past and the leaders have so-called apologized, which was the most insincere apology I've ever heard in my life. The apology doesn't take away the ongoing impact of what happened on adults now.
Yes.
Who likely suffer probably their entire adult life with these kinds of things.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that apology, it's wild. Especially you coming out and being able to study and learn things and then go back and read something like that again. And it's, oh my God, talk about gaslighting. Is they literally were like, we're sorry you guys feel like that. We're good now. So anyways.
Exactly. It's full of if it happened to you.
I know.
If there was abuse. Please stop. You knew full well you encouraged it and you did not ever. This is another thing. They never actually punished the abusers, even very late on into the late 80s and 90s. When someone was found to be a pedophile, they would excommunicate them. And nothing else. Where was all the reporting to authorities and things like that? No, nothing still. And often they would actually excommunicate them and then let them back in a few years later. And they thought they'd repented or something.
Because what they were actually getting excommunicated for was not the abuse to the child or the young person. It was because they jeopardized their standing, like they could have got the authorities come. That's what they were getting punished for, is because that's that secret letter that went around to all the leadership. That's, oh, we just want to let you guys know that we still believe that everything that happened was right and that sex with kids is still like of the Lord.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the letter Karen Zerbe wrote after a court case, where to win the court case, they had to denounce Berg and all his teachings. And then straight away after, as soon as they won, well, won, I put that, I say that very loosely. They didn't actually win the custody case. But as soon as the custody was granted back to the mother under heavy conditions and surveillance, of course, they issued out that letter where it was like, guys, we had to say this for the case, but obviously we do not believe it, blah, blah, blah. So seriously.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that going on because the same thing happened in the mid 80s when they said, we don't have sex with kids anymore. And then they sent out another letter saying, okay, we still believe in it, but the world just can't accept that it's okay. So we have to stop doing it.
Yeah. Definitely didn't stop anyway, but.
I've always laughed at that. I don't know if it was when Ricky died. And there was a lot of documentaries going around and they were talking to this family spokesperson, Claire, and she was like, we outlawed child sex in 19, whatever. And the interviewer was like, yeah, but have you even thought about like why that needed to be said? And I was like, oh my God, I love you. That's really true. It's like, hey guys, can we please stop murdering? Yep. Gotcha. Good.
Even well after that, they continue to support and sponsor their well-known abusers. Sarah Keeley, who obviously was one of Ricky Rodriguez's main abusers too, who wrote the story of Davidito. She was financed and kept in the cults and probably still financed by them these days.
Yep.
And now they're doing nothing to bring any kind of validation to the victims. It's all words and absolutely no action.
Yeah.
Yeah, like every time a survivor speaks out about their story, TFI releases a statement. Oh, now we're just a small online community of believers, so on and so forth. But I left just 3 years ago, and I can say that there was still abuse going on. And I know people who are still suffering abuse from TFI people right now. So what they say is not true.
Yeah.
So how long ago did you leave, Ella?
3 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's quite current then.
Yes.
So you're probably really still all just processing this, huh?
Yeah. I was living like a double life in my family, like pretending to be a good disciple, but doing my own thing, waiting until I could be financially independent, and then couldn't be.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah. That's interesting that there was... you were in only 3 years ago. So yeah, that just supports what we all know, that they are definitely not some little online community. If you look at even their products that they're selling online, between their magazines, their audio, their children, a lot of children products, whether it's video, audio, activity, books, which they sell under many fake names on platforms such as Amazon. Very easy to link them, actually, if you start looking into it. So they've got a proper production company that's still very much functioning. They're still receiving tithes from all their members.
Yes.
With a million or more coming in every year. So I think the claim that they're an online community is a little bit hard to believe.
Yeah, instead of what we used to call WS, now it's called TFI Services. So there is still a leadership structure that produces their products and finances stuff.
Oh, living proof, ladies and gentlemen. They are not a small online community like they claim. Wow.
I'm curious, so Ella, is there still, in just from your observation, is there still a lot of young people?
No. I think most of the young people have left, and most of them are like FGAs. But I think there's FGAs, and then there's minors, quite a few minors, who are still in the care of TFI.
Right. Yes. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. Like, they're still minors in the cult.
Yeah. What did they do? Just keep having babies? Like,
apparently somebody did.
After Go for the Gold, which I always had this very interesting theory about Go for the Gold, is if you think about the timing of it, it's quite incredible. They went from contraception is banned to actually, we're going to give you guys some more freedom. If you want to use contraception, you can. And then Go for the Gold came out, where it was like, we know we said you could have your freedom, but if you are using contraception, the Lord's really not going to bless you. Whereas if you're just trusting him and using nothing, you're going to get your gold medal type thing. And if you think about the period that happened in, when FGAs, the first generation, was nearing, they were probably getting 5 to 10 years close to their menopause period. Think about it. And at the same time, a lot of SGAs were starting to leave when this came out. So what was this really about? Expanding numbers by chance?
Yeah.
My parents at that point had 10 kids already. And I think they were going to stop there. But then Go for the Gold came out and 3 more came along.
Yes, I was one of the 3 kids that born after Go for the Gold came out. So.
In your family?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. How many are in your family, Ella?
9.
9, okay.
Yes. So when Go for the Gold came out, my mom already has 6. And she was like, a lot already. But then Go for the Gold came out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think that's when I had 2 more brothers also.
It's like that's
weird.
One last push to increase membership numbers. Or to replace those that were leaving. The timing was very odd. And then as soon as that kind of faded off a bit, they went into the whole intergenerational marriage thing to try and retain few SGAs were left by getting them married to FGAs.
Oh my God. It's
really creepy.
That's a nightmare.
It can lead to more babies.
Wow.
That's a nightmare.
It's weird that I have the smallest family here. There's only 8 in my family.
Only.
Yeah.
Natasha, yeah, did you say, you said 10, but then you had three, your mom had three more?
13.
So there's 13. Okay, yeah.
And that's with just my mom and my dad together. There's five lines as well.
Yeah. I was thinking how, I was just thinking of the cult, probably as they are now, but even especially back then, if like we all started taking 23andMe tests, the DNA tests, it'd be very interesting to find out who actually fathered who.
Yeah, I think there'd be a lot of surprises.
I think so too.
Yeah. I don't think my mom was very honest with me about a couple of my brothers and sisters. I'm sitting here going, there's just no way. You're not the right color. You're not the right. So just, you're telling me that this person had the blonde baby? No, it didn't happen. Especially when you're like, but there's this other guy right here that looks just like that baby. I heard you guys in the room.
We lived with this family, really funny. They had all of them blonde hair, blue eyes, and they had four kids, and then the fifth one was a Chinese baby. And when she was having the baby and they were in the hospital, as soon as the baby came out of the doctor, because it's an Asian doctor as well, and he's like looking at the baby, just looks at the dad, and he's like, what do I do? And the dad goes, one in five people in the world are Chinese. I guess that's, we were due.
Oh, my goodness.
Hope jokes, right? That is a good one. OMG, that's funny.
Oh boy. It sounds really creepy, but that's also one of the reasons when I left the cult, I told myself I'm never going to date an Xer.
Yeah.
You just don't know. You could be dating your half brother, couldn't you? You have no idea, yeah. Really.
The only reason we know of one in that are from our families because she happened to come out looking exactly like my sister, like exactly. But otherwise, yeah, like, you're looking at somebody who's the same age in the same city in the same, like, you're seeing each other. If they kept on going with the vision that they had, I just, what was going to happen? Are we just going to all intermarry each other? It's just weird that people don't even stop and think about those kind of things. It's just, it's so weird to me.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. When you think about what could have happened if everyone had stayed.
Having
a third generation of children with a lot of physical and mental health problems from interbreeding and things like that. People who just didn't know they were related. And
you're not only passing on your trauma genes, but passing on the crazy genes.
That's weird. I just can't stop thinking about like the tactical planning that must have gone into a lot of things that we didn't realize. Like, yeah. Now that you mentioned that about the timing and the go for the gold, all of a sudden, all these things are going through my head. And I'm just like, oh my God, that was like a tactical move, not a prophecy from Jesus. Yeah. A lot of it was like, okay, this is how we want to make it work. So start spitting out some words. Right. They probably had like a plan in front of them. Jesus said, go into all the world. What is that you said right there? I'm just reading like their planned notes with a few little thou shalt nots and weird little praise the Lords in between. It just, yeah. I bet if we put, somebody would have to probably put a lot of time into it, but we started going back and looking at some of the visions and the moves here and this and that. A lot of them were probably tactical, even for reasons that we don't know and we'll never find out. But
yeah,
like for example, me moving to Thailand, because they were going to send me to Macau, and then the next day I was going to Thailand, and I never knew why. And oh no, when I went to the Philippines, next day I'm going to the Philippines instead. And then I found out like a while back that they had gone in with all these visas, like 200 people or something, and all got denied. And I was one of them.
Oh, wow. Like,
we never knew any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We were just fucking there and, okay, you're leaving. Oh, okay, I'll pack my stuff. I just got to close my suitcase. I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
My husband still teases me for not ever moving in anywhere. I put all my stuff in the drawers. I'm like, I'm finally moved in.
I know.
Still got some stuff packed.
one of my early experiences with when I was dating someone I was like that I was with for a little bit longer. We went on a trip. The first trip that we went on, it was like we were going to be a weekend in Vegas, and like he's unpacking his stuff and like putting his clothes in the drawers in the hotel. I was like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "This is normal." I was like, "No, it's not." But yeah, you can still, and we're experts at packing.
Yeah,
the Tetris, man.
Yep,
it can fit anything and anywhere.
But it is very interesting. One of us should do a kind of timeline thing of all the big moves of the spirit that happened and what was actually behind it. Like we all know the go east thing when you go to the land of the rising sun was actually Interpol's looking into the cult. Let's all go to third world countries where we can operate without being noticed. We know that now. That's 100% proven. All the other big moves, there was always something behind it. And it sounds really horrible, but for me, looking at the way they were with having children and all their sexual policies and all that, I really feel like breeding was their way of expanding the cult. That and joining members, but I don't think that was enough. They wanted to expand as much as possible. And for them, they really used breeding as their method of expansion. We were just numbers, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what my mom always said. That was her grief when all of her children, oddly, began fleeing out of the house when they were 17 or 18. Like, she was disappointed. She had failed in life by failing to produce a flock of disciples for a TFI. That's what she understood was her life's goal. Her life's goal was to produce children who would be disciples in TFI. And then she just watched it all crumble, and that was, like, devastating to her.
Sad, isn't it?
Yeah, that's incredible.
Like, we didn't exist for our own reasons or as individuals. We existed to be soldiers in God's end time army. That's all.
Yeah, which is why I think a lot of us struggle with that. Unless you're producing something, you're useless. I feel like you shouldn't even be around unless you're actually producing things. And I see that a lot too, that we struggle with that. Because from our birth, it's like that. You were born for a reason, for slavery. That's what you're born for.
Yeah.
That and the delusion that we were going to be incredibly special end time soldiers, the highest elite in God's army and all that. For me, when I left the cult, I didn't realize it straight away, but obviously I became extremely depressed. And I realized after a few years later that must have been at the core of what it was, because you're raised your whole life to think you're something special and that you had this huge calling and you were destined for greatness and also treated like shit on the side, obviously.
Yeah.
Having that whole business and then suddenly going to, whoa, I'm just a normal person. In fact, I'm not even normal. I'm a completely abnormal person who doesn't fit into society with no education, nothing special that I can base a life on. And it's just kind of soul destroying, really.
Yeah, no, it is. It really is.
Yeah, that's what made the reboot in 2009 so devastating. Like, for the younger half of SGAs, like, I'm 25 now, so I was a teenager when the reboot happened. All of a sudden, the end time that we had been trained our whole lives for was going to happen a very long time later. And we were not going to be missionaries. We would all have to go study and get system jobs. So then we were just all left wondering, what was the first half of our lives for? And it was the community we were raised in was crumbling apart. And basically, it was like there was an actual grieving process, even for kids who didn't want to stay in TFI, because we felt everything we had lived for was over. Because, well, he has changed his mind for unknown reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, madness. And as well, for the first generation, You can imagine all these adults who spent their entire lives.
Yeah, huge identity crisis.
Giving them money, and suddenly they're out there in their 50s and 60s. They've never had a real job. They have no retirement fund. It's just, it must be devastating for a lot of people. And it's really, for me, it was just so cowardly, the whole thing. You took the best years of these people's lives. You took the childhoods of these kids. And suddenly when we're getting a bit old now, we can't be bothered anymore. Okay, bye, everyone. Have a good life. It's incredibly selfish and just no ownership at all for the people who had dedicated their lives, their loyalty, everything to them. They'd given them everything. And they were just dumped.
It frightens me what things are going to look like in the next 5 to 10 years, because like my mom, she's 70. She called me yesterday because she was just talking about how she might have to move to Mexico to be able to stretch the money she's going to get from the little stipend that she's going to get from the government, because she has nothing. She had never paid in taxes, has no social security, has no nothing. And there's the argument you also stayed in the cult. So they have some culpability, but regardless, the situation is now that there's all these people that are getting old and going to need care because they have nothing. So they're actually going to be needing not only physical care, but financial support. And guess who's going to have to do that? All of us who didn't get an education, like the people that probably most of us are barely building up to that place where we're like, okay, now we have something to give to our kids. And it's, oh no, I also now have to raise the parents that bore me into this cult. You can just see that ripple effect of, it's not just one thing that you did. You didn't just steal like our childhoods. You stole our children's childhoods. Because if that's what the future is going to look like, and it's completely on the cult, it breaks my heart thinking about what's going to end up happening to a lot of us.
Yeah, and a lot of SGAs, and that's the issue I'm also having to face, is that we're going to have to support our abusers in their old age.
Exactly. Yep.
Terrible conflict, isn't it? Because on one hand, you could say, tough, you deserve this. You stayed in the cult for so many years. You had opportunities to leave and didn't. But in another sense, you have to take into account maybe the brainwashing and manipulation and the fear of leaving something that was your whole life. So you can do the blame thing. You can be like, I wash my hands of you, but then we're also all human beings. So we're not going to be, many of us are going to feel rightly or wrongly responsible in some way. It becomes, like you said, our responsibility now, which then impacts our own kids, our futures.
Yep.
And this is where you see just the catastrophic and never-ending effects of this cult. It just doesn't end. Generation after generation is impacted. Yeah. And we're certainly not at the end of it now, for sure. Like you said, like we were saying earlier about strategic timing, reboot was very strategic too, because thousands of people were going to retire and they were going to expect the cult to help them with that. But no, they just ran off with the money.
Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't know what the premise of the reboot was. I've heard people talk about it, but I didn't know that's what it was. They just send everybody out. Well, now it's time to get system jobs.
They said it was the Lord decided that we're all grown up now. Like, we were first spiritual children. Now we're spiritual adults. We can be independent and responsible. We don't need Mama and Peter to lead and guide us anymore. So now Mama and Peter are saying, good job, everyone. You grew up. Bye-bye.
That's interesting. I wonder if that's not only a financial strategic move, but if it was a legal strategic move as well.
Yeah.
Oh, our kids are old enough now and smart enough, and now they know what we did to them. Okay, everybody, run.
Oh, yeah. I think that was 100% part of it, too. We were getting to an age, more and more people were starting to speak out about their experience. Okay, let's shut this operation down, but not fully shut it down because we still want the few of you who are still faithful to us to give us money.
Yeah, they still need their cushy life. Yeah. Speaking of that, I'm curious what kind of support that you guys have gotten and what, and I'm sorry, I keep saying you guys, it's such a habit, but what kind of support have you seen in the ex-member community, both the FGAs and the SGAs? And if, and what kind of pushback you're getting from people as well for this, for the COG TFI survivors, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
COG TFI survivors. Yeah. So are you getting a lot of pushback from people? And I'm also curious if how many FGAs you have on board that are like, yes, this needs to happen.
FGAs, very few.
Yeah, very few.
I think, as we all know, most of them are severely in denial and would just rather put their head in the sand and pretend like it didn't happen or just never speak of it again. So yeah, getting support from the FGAs is definitely few and far between. Ella, you have more involvement with the accounts, running yeah, social media accounts. So from an SGA perspective, what do you think?
I think we are getting some pushback from SGAs who feel like we're digging up their painful past and rehashing all those triggering things, and they would rather just let it die out of public consciousness. And I've also faced pushback from within my own family, quite vigorous pushback, because they feel like I might jeopardize their careers. Like, they're afraid of being outed because of our campaign.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I got some pushback when I posted some of the stuff. Because I have some FGA friends, mostly people that I lived with or knew in Thailand and stuff. And, oh, they weren't that bad type of thing. Or we went on these missions to Russia or stuff like that. Boy, oh boy. I was sick. Good thing I was sick when I got these text messages. But this guy was like, how dare you treat Baba like that? And so would be so ashamed of you. And oh, yeah. Like, how dare you act like that and say those things? And I'm like, what the fuck? Are you fucking kidding me right now? Yeah, I got some really nasty pushback.
Yeah, same here. When I published my book in 2014, it was a big fallout over that. Big.
What was your book called, Natasha?
Born into the Children of God. So just talking about my life in the cult. It was very interesting when I published it already. There were individuals that contacted my publisher, threatening them to try and get it not published.
Wow.
Try and block the publishing. So I had to fight tooth and nail to even get it out there. And that's when I just realized the level of denial is astounding, even from certain second generation adults who have taken more of the path, which is not the wrong path to take, but some have taken the path. I don't want to talk about the past. I don't want to hear about it. I'm going to focus everything on my career, or I've got things that are going well for me now. And that's great for you. I have no problem with you taking that path. But then don't judge people who haven't taken that path and who have chosen to speak out.
Right.
Don't call them a liar when you know full well it's not a lie. And that's what was really difficult for me, was to feel from people I was very close to, suddenly this rejection of everything that happened in the past, and basically calling me a liar and saying exaggerated things. And even now, I still hear commentary from certain people every time I do another article or another interview, those on TV or something like that. You always get little comments going around behind your back. For example, one that was so very hurtful to me recently. There was a TV interview that was aired, and the person had called another person I know and said, we take exception to her using the word rape when she was told, because it wasn't rape. There was no penetration. And I was just like, wow, really? Wow. You're going to pick on small details like that? It was just so, they use these little things like that to try and get to your credibility. But it was like, hang on, so you're saying I can talk about being sexually molested, but I'm not allowed to use the word rape because apparently that's only when there's penetration. Yeah, and they pick on these little things to try and make you look like a liar. And you're like, do you even hear what you're saying here?
Yeah, that's crazy.
And it happened to me in the first place. There are those out there who will always have something against those who speak out, and no doubt we'll continue to get that with the COG TFI survivor group from both SGAs and FGAs who just want to bury the whole thing and want the world to just forget about it and never it be spoken of again.
Yeah.
Yeah, we even had a recent incident on Instagram in which a former member actually named one of our group members and said, you can't accuse TFI of abuse because you yourself are an abuser. Like, actually went and made some very serious and false accusations publicly online.
Yeah. What did you got? What did you guys have to do something about that? What did, or well, it was just
with the people involved that these were ungrounded accusations. So, like, we deleted her comments so her filth is not polluting the atmosphere.
What do you think that it was about? Because I heard about it, and I was like, that was a really hard thing to understand, because if it was not true, and not, I'm not saying that it was true, but if it's not true, then what was the purpose behind it?
I think they wanted to discredit what we were saying. Like, you can't say that if you are also involved.
Yeah. And that's the problem with people wanting to sweep it under the rug or forget about it, let's not talk about it, is you end up in situations where, because it's not going to stay. It's not going to stay behind you because it's the way you grew up. It's the things that were ingrained in you. It's going to come up in some way, and it can turn ugly either for them or for other people. And it's like the worst road that you can possibly take in a healing journey is to ignore it. If you are going to have people that are going to stand up and say, oh, this didn't happen. It must get very complicated when you got people that, for whatever their own personal reasons or the fact that they haven't faced things themselves, and they start fighting back on something like this where people are trying to get justice, and you have people coming up and saying, no, don't do this, or that didn't happen, when you know it did. But that's because of their own story. And yet it's affecting what you're trying to do.
Yeah, and I think I don't want to play the blame game here, but I think a lot of SGA suicides could be avoided, or could have been avoided, if more FGAs were upfront about things and talked to their kids about things and helped to support them, went through some kind of therapy themselves to understand how they could help their children and how they could right the wrongs of the past. And sadly, that's just not the case in the majority of cases. It's really, let's just move on and let's forget about it until there's another tragedy, which no doubt they will refuse to accept. It's just sad that there's a level of denial. And I understand why, but it certainly does nothing to help the second generation heal.
And it's so complicated because some of our abusers are our friends' parents.
Yeah.
That gets really complicated when you're like, okay, really close to you, but your dad.
Yeah, we had that come up in one of the groups where somebody, an FGA, died, passed away. And there was a lot of people, because they were actually a fairly public person in the cult. So there was a lot of people coming around, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, that type of thing. And one of the SGAs was like, yeah, this man like spent years abusing me and blah, 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 blah. And I don't know. Do you remember, Jemima? It was like weeks, I think, of arguing over that. Like, people just back and forth. Some people are like, shouldn't have done that. Other people, they have every right to do that. This is going to happen more and more, because either they're going to get too old to do anything and then we have to take care of them, or if they start dying, when someone that abused you passes away, there's that really weird space of like closure, because it's not closure. Because, oh, you never got to confront them. You never got an apology from them. And now you cannot at all. So when an abuser of someone dies, I understand that conflict that the abused goes through. And this is what we're going to have to start facing more and more as time goes on. And especially if we're able to start getting some legislation, some type of justice that way, then you're doubling down on those kind of issues too. Of you can't accuse my father of that. Maybe their parents were good to them, but they were abusive to somebody else. I guess I've always been the person, if somebody ever came up and said, yeah, like your mom or your dad did this to me, I'd be like, oh my God, I believe them because of everything that we saw and the way that we grew up. But that's not an easy thing for a lot of people to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a situation like that. I had tracked down and found an FGA who had very badly abused one of my siblings who was living out in Myanmar, is that how we call it now, formerly Burma. And he'd started a school there.
Yeah.
Of course. They always end up working with children, these people.
Yeah.
Funnily yeah. enough. And I had exposed him online and I put out his photo and the name of the school and all that. And I got contacted by his daughter, who was like, no, you don't understand. I run the school now with my husband. Please stop this. Take down what you put online. And I was like, you know, I feel bad for you, but no. If yeah. I go look at the recent photos on your school page, he's still in them, and so is your mom. Can we just stop this?
Yeah.
You're actually very lucky taking advantage of this very successful school and all the income it brings that was created by an abuser. But it gets so complicated. It can get really complicated because you don't want to actively harm someone's future. But at the same time, you also know that even in the SGA community, some were treated, let's say some had advantages,
yep.
especially when they left. So children of leaders and things like that, where others didn't. So you don't really feel like they're completely blameless either. For example, with the SGA thing, there are some SGAs who left the cult who were given substantial amount of money, who went on to start businesses and things like that, because
yeah.
simply they were the child of the right person in the leadership ring. And that's really difficult to think about when you know that the majority of SGAs were literally kicked out without a penny in their pocket, had to struggle for decades to get anywhere in life.
Yeah.
So it's just all of that and the parents and, oh, it can get so complicated when you start speaking up.
Yeah.
I think that's why a lot of people don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But somebody has to. You can't, in my opinion, you can't just let these people carry on and doing these things, because if they did it to you, they're going to do it to somebody else.
Absolutely. Let's take Paul Pelequin, for example, who was a notorious abuser in the cult. Everyone knows it. There's evidence of it. People have spoken out about it. And where did I find him? Somewhere in the U.S. I can't recall exactly where. It might have been Florida. And he had a party company. He was like a clown and balloonist. In children's parties. I actually phoned him up. Right before I exposed him online, I just called him up. I was like, hi, is this so-and-so, his fake name?
Yeah.
Yes. I was like, hi, Paul Pelequin. Just to let you know, I'll be posting publicly about you shortly and about your little company that you're running. And he just hung up the phone.
Coward.
Got Sarah Keeley, as we said, the notorious. We all yeah. know there's even photographic evidence of her abusing children. I found her in Costa Rica working for an organization for vulnerable women and children. I mean, it's just incredible. Incredible. But again, you call Interpol was notified, the FBI was notified, the Costa Rican police was notified. The media in Costa Rica was notified. No one did anything. There's a lot to be said for that, because you think about Interpol and FBI, for example, they have many statements on file. They
yeah.
have a lot of evidence on file, and they have not done a single thing in all these years. I don't know whether it's not a priority or something, but it's pretty disgraceful. As for the yeah. Costa Rican media, they were going to do a big thing in the media. They're going to publish a big article about her. And the scandal of it. And then suddenly, bang, silence. Everyone just disappeared. It was like, incredible.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow. I don't know who was paid off there, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we can find the abusers, but nothing happens to them because there's no warrants out against them. No one's looking into them. This is the issue.
Yeah.
We have mountains to climb in the future.
What's your wish list for what you're doing right now? What way can anyone listening to this, what way can they support what you're doing or find out more about what you're doing even?
We're on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Reddit. Yeah. So we have accounts if you search CRGTFI survivors. Okay. And we're focusing now on different themes monthly. So April, we did child abuse. And then May, we did, we republished survivor interviews and content. And now June, we're doing discrimination. And with Karen Zerbe's birthday next month, we're going to be doing something about that.
Ah.
So everyone can support us by liking and sharing our content so we can increase the visibility of our accounts. Because right now our accounts are mostly followed by fellow survivors. People can help us by liking and sharing so the public can have more visibility.
Yeah, that's what we really need, is many more likes and shares and interaction on our social media pages to raise our visibility. So we can start to getting a bit more attention online. And we regularly post, you'll see the petition, which is called Bringing Karen Zerbe to Justice on change.org. So that's really our focus right now. And for me, the ultimate game, I'm not asking for much. I just want to see Karen Zerbe in a court of justice. Mm-hmm. That's my ultimate aim and always has been, because I'm just disgusted by the fact that she was so integrally involved in everything that happened, including all the child abuse. Mm-hmm. And yet she's just sitting there,
still eating her zucchini cheesecake. Yeah, that's what she posts about now.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like trying to really come across as a chill health freak. Yeah. Posts her little words of wisdom. On my birthday, try not to be too much sugar. But every year I have my bikini cheesecake. God's sake.
Yeah, that's awful. Yeah.
One of these birthdays, we'd like her to be eating prison food.
Yeah, and that would be probably the closest we could get to justice for her. Although she deserves much worse, even if according to the Jesus that they follow, them particularly. How many times did you hear that verse? It's better for a millstone to be put around his neck. And it's really interesting that now that we are all grown up and said, yeah, we're that kid that was getting hurt. So where's millstone?
Yeah.
But I've actually been thinking about it a bit since I knew we were going to be talking with you all and stuff. That's always been my question, is like, how are we going to come up against the, like, getting her into the United States even and prosecuting and all that kind of stuff. But there's actually something bigger behind it, I'm thinking, which is the fact that, especially around the statute of limitations, more people are coming out and speaking about what's been going on, but they've been trapped. Everybody was trapped in, whether it was like a fundamentalist group or a cult like us, we couldn't even go to the authorities if we wanted to at the time. Now we're growing up and we like to press charges. We'd like to see something done. And everyone's like, well, too bad. You should have come at the first 5 years that it happened. And that's a really big issue, not just for us, but for a lot of other people. And I think that's like a good thing to that we can start putting out in front of people, is now these kids, we were victims of a crime, really. And if you can get the authorities or legislation or whatever to look at that, I don't mean if you can get, but if we could get laws and society even just to look at cult kids as victims of crime, that could change a lot of people's lives of what they're able to do, whether it's get some help, get government help, or it would just be, yes, then you can go and prosecute your abusers. All the steps that you guys are taking, whether or not it ends up with Zerbe behind bars, there's that underlying other important work, which is we should have a voice now. We should have a voice now because we didn't before. And instead of just being told that, sorry, too late, statute of limitations, it's a really big deal. Trafficked people face that too. It's an issue, I think, in our quote unquote system of justice.
Yeah, that was the second thing I was talking about at the beginning. I just could not remember the term. I said we have the two big issues, the international nature of the crimes, and the second was the statute of limitations. There are more and more countries that are actually abolishing it for all serious crimes, whether it's the rape, sexual crime, violence, trafficking, but there needs to be more countries that abolish it. It should not exist anywhere worldwide. It's absolutely insane, because even if you could, let's say with myself, when I left at 18, say 5 years from that, yes, I could have gone to the police, but where? Huh. That's another question. But even assuming the crime had happened in the country I was living in and my abuser was there too, people don't realize what a state of shock you're in when you leave a cult. Your first instinct is how to survive. You need to find a way to earn money. You're completely traumatized. It can take you 10, 15, 20 years to even get to a point where you're willing to even talk about it. Yeah. You can't underestimate what the trauma does and how that will keep victims just silenced for years and years sometimes. You don't just come out and realize, oh, look, I'm a huge victim, I'm going to the police now. It just doesn't work like that, does yeah. it?
Not very often, no.
That's a huge challenge we face. And yeah. I think definitely we will be including that in some of our campaigns in the future. But then, yeah. as I said earlier, when there's enough attention from the media, enough outrage from the public, suddenly there doesn't seem to be an issue with statute of limitations.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So let's see if we can get enough people to be talking about a cause, then maybe we can actually get something to happen despite it.
Yes. I know a lot of people have gone on campaigns or whatever, but I feel like this one's sticking. Like, you guys have some perseverance behind it. It's not just a little whim and I'm going to do this for 2 months and then I'm just going to, nothing's happening. So goodbye. So yeah, I feel like we'll definitely try to support you in any way we can. Whisper and I are actually have the privilege of meeting with some lawyers and the International Cultic Studies Association in about a week. A little over a week. Exciting. Yeah. And it's the first time that anybody that's not a board member is going to be part of the meeting. So I'm really excited about it, because that's what the Counter Cult Coalition is really trying to do, is change legislation to give more resources to cult children and then also more laws to protect them. And she asked me, what do you guys think is a big thing? I'm like, the statute of limitations.
Yep.
That is our biggest obstacle. And she said, the problem with that is the memory and this and that. And I'm like, but that's completely unfair. I don't think my mind is telling me stories. The fact is true that I got raped.
Yeah.
Well, so I think it's fantastic. I feel like the more of us that try to do something and try to make a difference, that the more we'll be noticed. And
yeah.
And hopefully that things can be done about this.
Yeah, for sure. And I also really appreciate hearing from you guys and what you're doing. And when we were interviewing Dr. Yanya Lalit, she was talking about advocacy and how sometimes survivors want to go directly from their situation into advocacy. Because of course, can somebody get mad about what happened to me? That's a very healthy, actually a healthy reaction. But she was saying that unless people have taken steps to get healed and start their healing journey, it's going to implode, basically. So the way that you guys have created this group, it sounds like you have a real foundation of who you are and what you've done. And now you're ready to, okay, now it's time to do something for other people. So I really appreciate that with talking with you guys.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So everybody help support COGTFI survivors.
Yeah.
You can find us on all social networks pretty much.
Yeah.
And liking and sharing and sign the petition to bring Karen Zerbe to justice.
So it's on change.org. What would people search for to find it?
I think if you would search for Karen Zerbe, Z-E-R-B-Y, it should come up.
Okay.
Otherwise, if you find any of our social media pages, it's often a link on our post.
Okay. Yeah, very good. And we can put links to all of your guys' stuff in the transcript.
In the show notes.
In the show notes, yep.
Thank you.
If you search Karen Zerbe on change.org, it'll come up right away.
Perfect.
Test.
Okay. Yeah.
And a petition.
Yeah, come on. No matter what you feel about this vision, this purpose, like, you can put your name on a piece of paper. Make a signature. If you agree that, if anyone agrees that, yes, bad shit happened in the cult, then sign it. Put your name down. You don't have to get involved. Just a way to support each other, I think, is really important.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yes. Thank you guys so much for joining
for
us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been really good. And I feel very inspired and motivated to continue to do whatever we can and use our voices in whichever way we can.
Yeah, same to you guys as well. It's very inspiring, your podcast.
So sweet.
Yeah.
And Natasha, we'll put your book also there.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll make sure that there's a link to that, so anybody that wants to read that can find it easily. Born in the Children of God is the title, correct?
Born into the Children of God. Yeah.
Okay. Born into the Children of God. Okay. Awesome. We'll get all that info from you guys. Yes. Thank you so much. And we'll end it like we always do. Stay brave. And remember that every butterfly was once a caterpillar.
Oh.